Hey, y'all. Instead of starting this episode with a clip from the conversation, with a teaser clip, I'm going to include some stand-up that I did at an open mic in early 2018 in Austin. It's an open mic called Playpen, where the premise is that all the comics do brand new material, and so I did. And I was exploring the question of trans pedophiles in this little stand-up thing that I've never really did that much with in terms of making this into a bit, but I thought it was a fun time at this mic. And I just will say that I kept saying, you know, trans women taking estrogen. And of course, the reality is that they also take testosterone blockers, which is really more apropos to what I'm talking about. I don't know if at the time I just didn't know about testosterone blockers, or sometimes just easier because audiences don't usually know that, or at least they didn't, you know, 4 years ago. They don't really know much about it. So now I'll, you know, even when I say, when I make jokes about trans women, a lot of times I will just say taking estrogen because I'm afraid, you know, I don't want to, and testosterone blockers, it's unwieldy. But just so you know, really the testosterone blockers are the more probably, you know, impactful part of what I'm about to say. So just a point of order for that. But yeah, enjoy this crazy stand up. I can't believe this shit that I say on stage, but I'm also not wrong even when I'm being funny. Okay, enjoy this.
It is you. We've still never had no trans person has ever molested a kid in a restroom. Still batting 1,000 or 0 or whatever on that. Woo. Let's just do a quick shout out to all the trans pedophiles who, statistically speaking, do exist, for just controlling themselves so that an awkward day when that finally happens, you know. Only you just one, and those, because I've done the math on it, taking the population of America, and then turns out that 0.6% of the population is trans, and 1% of the population is pedophiles. They're beating the trans. It's interesting, right? Because you see trans people throughout your day, at least I do. Apparently you're seeing pedophiles too. 1%, anyway, all right. Anyway, so you do the math on that. And then you have to control for like the sexuality of the person, like, because their gender, they have to be attracted to the kid of the same gender. Turns out most trans people are bi, so you can't reduce the numbers as much as you'd like, so. Still turns out that there's probably at least 12,000 trans pedophiles in the country. Maybe you can remove some germaphobes. I don't know. Clap if you'd have sex in a restroom. All right, so there's 6,000, probably, you know, it's like 50% of y'all. So maybe there's 6,000 trans pedophiles who it's pretty impressive that none of them have done it yet. But I will say, like, because a lot of people are worried about trans women in the restroom, because they've got the penis. They ought to be concerned more about the trans men. Trans men are taking testosterone, going through this puberty thing, having like violent sexual urges. No one is afraid of them, though. It's really insulting, honestly, that no one is afraid of my brothers, you know. But trans women, it's like, why would you be afraid of that? They're taking estrogen. Y'all understand these are people who are choosing to chemically castrate themselves down to the sex drive of a woman? Y'all know the government used to do that to queer people. Now they want to pay for it themselves. If anything, the government should just subsidize any penis person who wants to take estrogen. The government should subsidize that. It's just making the world a safer, less me too place. Anyway, those are all the points I wanted to make.
For joining me for part two of my conversation with a non-offending pedophile trans woman. And as teased, we start this conversation off by talking about sports. If you listen to the last episode, then you'll know that she brought up at the end that she has an idea for how we can fix sports, or how it should look for the trans people in sports situation. So this episode starts out with a lively debate about the sports issue, and then we also talked about whether people who are attracted to children should have friendships with kids or something like that. We just talked about, you know, whether she had friendships with kids, stuff like that. We talked about child sex dolls, whether those are good or bad. We talked about age of consent laws and how they differ for straight versus gay. We talked about the sex offender registry. We talked about politicians and, like, you know, the pedophile elite and stuff, Epstein type things. And whether, you know, people's societies like freaking out about abuse of kids is makes things worse for kids than, like, there if there's better ways. There's been some studies about this. I've been reading Galileo's Middle Finger lately, and yeah, she talks about in there, I don't remember the details, but some people tried to do some research into, you know, how we could improve things for kids, and of course they got fucking just canceled for even looking into it, because like Tom DeLay of Texas, but they did in like an act of Congress condemning this research, even though the research is like trying to help kids not get molested and to have better outcomes when they do. But these faggoty ass Republicans sometimes, not that all Republicans are faggoty ass, but some faggoty ass Republican types, like Dr. Laura Schlesinger got involved, but these people don't read the research, you know, they just hear the headlines and they go, oh, this is... Anyway, so you should look into that if you are interested. But so that's what we talked about in this episode, and it's juicy and fun and good. I think, if anything, part two might have been better than part one. So listen to all of it. And, you know, again, there's really nothing in my career that you could cancel. So fuck you if you think I should be canceled for trying to make the world a better place the best way I know how. All right, but this is Politically Non-Binary. I guess I should introduce myself. I'm Ariel Isaac Norman, a comedian and podcaster, among other things, and I've just gotten back from a wonderful trip to LA where I got to perform at the store for the first time, among other things, and I met so many people and got to replenish my friendships and smell the flowers in West Hollywood. Anyway, and I'm about to be, oh yeah, because I'm putting this out soon, so you can go to my Instagram at ellendegenderless if you want to see my shows that are upcoming. I'm about to be in Oklahoma City, Temple, Fort Worth, San Antonio, of course shows in Austin. Yeah, there's all kinds of good stuff going on, so go check that out. You can also go to arielisaacnorman.com, A-R-I-E-L-L-E. A lot of people don't know how to spell Isaac, so I will say I-S-A-A-C. Some people think there's two S's and one A. That would be Isaac. But I get it. My name is a fucking obstacle course. ArielIsaacNorman.com. ArielNorman.com also works, if that helps. I think OverSheriel.com might work. Anyway. And I'll be back at the end to be like, blah, 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 go support the podcast. But do support the podcast. I'll say stuff at the end, but like, whatever. You know all the different ways that you can support a podcast. I could list them, and I will later, but you should. The podcast is growing, and it's been nice to see the numbers going up, and that's just really cool and gratifying and whatever. A lot of y'all were interested and stimulated by the idea of a trans woman pedophile conversation, so good job being interested. I'm glad that it's working. Okay. You're gonna love this episode, though. Seriously. I loved it. You're gonna love it. And then you can let me know if you think we're wrong. If you think I'm wrong. If you think she's wrong. If you think there's stuff we didn't mention. Again, the point of this podcast is someone comes on, my guest comes on and makes their case for a societal change of any kind. They make that case to me, someone totally politically androgynous and fluid. And, you know, I, as a stand-in for the audience, am sympathetic generally to people's perspectives, but also I'm always going to have a lot of questions and usually some jokes. I mean, obviously, I'm going to have some fun with a topic like this, because the more fucked up a topic is, the more ripe it is as material for humor. We make roses out of shit or whatever. Okay, I think I've said everything I need to say beforehand. Enjoy my conversation with the anonymous. Oh, and I'm about to finish the editing of this part because I'm recording the intro first, but I'm probably just going to have to fuck up both our voices again in order to fuck up her voice. Because, you know, too many people are, you know, violent and shitty and don't understand the difference between someone who's not hurting kids and is actively interested in helping kids not get hurt. And so they could find her. And, you know, anyway, she and her loved ones are afraid and don't want anyone, you know, being able to figure out her identity. So I'm going to change her voice, but because I'm bad at editing and don't know what I'm doing with GarageBand and shit, then I'm probably going to have to fuck up both our voices. So that's okay. I'm happy to sound, we're going to make it deeper. I'm happy for us both to sound like trans men, if that's what it takes to protect her. Okay. Enjoy the episode.
We should eliminate gendered sports leagues entirely. Listen to me. Okay. So everybody knows that taller people are better at basketball. This is just indisputable.
Sure.
So is it unfair? Like, in some way, should we have an Asian league? So that if you're a little short,
well, the Yao Mings of the world could be. So you could do it. We could have a lot of distinctions, right? We have a lot of distinctions between. So yeah, you could have they do in fighting. You can have heavyweight and lightweight. Yeah. There are ways
I think you could have a distinction there and say have an Asian league or a short person league or whatever for basketball.
You're gonna get yourself canceled with that Asian shit. You gotta laugh when you say it so people know you're kidding. Anybody 5'6" and below is welcome.
There's height-based genetic differences between races?
But there's still the Yao Mings of the world that can play in the tall one. About race. It's about whether you're 5'6" or below, but we call it the Asian League for fun.
What I'm saying is we could very easily have these sorts of things, but right now, say, women's sports leagues are, at least in the U.S., it's mandatory to fund them in schools and whatnot.
Yeah.
And like, as you say, AFABs are generally worse at a lot of existing sports. And so effectively, these are just as much vanity leagues as like a short person league in basketball would be. Mm-hmm. You know, they exist.
A vanity league?
Certain people feel better. A vanity league.
Well, not just to make you feel better, but to give you the ability to have a competition that you can be competitive in.
Yes.
I mean, if you want to call that vanity, it's not just vanity. I mean, do you play sports?
No, I will admit, I'm coming at this from outside.
Yeah, so if you don't understand the thrill of competition and how much it motivates you and how inspiring it is and how what you learn from team. I mean, like sports give people a lot of health on a lot of levels, a lot of community, a lot of meaning.
I maybe misspoke when I said that we should eliminate it. I more mean that like.
Well, it's the vanity league part that I'm personally against.
I more mean that we don't need to fund them necessarily. Like schools should be able to have them on their own. I'm certainly not saying that we should ban them.
Uh-huh.
But the idea that it is essential to have these separate things. And like
we don't know quite how much females will be able to do as socialization continues to change. But I don't think that we're ever going to be like, oh, it turns out females, those narrow, those wide hips and smaller lungs and everything. Yeah, that doesn't matter. It was all socialization. So if we had the Olympics and there was no female there was no female category for, I've just been watching like the skiing stuff that they do with the half pipes and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like there would be no females in the top levels of just almost any sport, except for there's like a gymnastics dancing thing that they're pretty good at. But
that would be that horrible.
Have females in on the TV sports ever?
I don't know that that would be that bad.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know. So I think certainly sports leagues for children or like for like the lower rungs there, it matters to have like, so that people can just play, you know, not like the absolute top level of the field, but like if we're looking at like the highest levels of human ability, mm-hmm. like I don't think we need to stratify things like that necessarily. I think we can just, you know, have one grouping.
So you're saying, but again, if that were the case, then there are most sports, there would be no females in the top 1,000, 8,000, 30,000, 100,000 people. I mean, it's depending on the whatever. You wouldn't, we wouldn't watch any women ever play soccer or ski or whatever. I mean, occasionally there would maybe be a female here and there who would be the third string of something or whatever. Yeah. Or for ultra running, there are some females doing some great stuff. But you think it would be chill to not have any chicks?
I think it would be fine. I don't think it would necessarily be like, I don't think it would be bad for society, and I don't really.
I've been watching the Winter Olympics with my girlfriend. Fine. Okay, my like main squeeze, whatever, girlfriend is an ultra runner, and I really like athletes, and I've been watching the Winter Olympics with my main squeeze the past few days, and we're watching mostly women's sports, and I would be very sad, and I would be extremely sad for my girlfriend if there were no women's sports that we could watch and participate in. She was incredible at soccer and could be.
I'm saying that we should ban it. Right?
Well, no, I'm but it wouldn't saying. Be. We wouldn't be have. It wouldn't be on TV if we didn't have. If we didn't have a female category where we go, we're going to do men's half pipe and women's half pipe, men's even bobsledding, women's bobsledding, any of this. I don't know about curling. That one, maybe.
I'm saying that like a lot of the conflict here comes from the fact that these things are like, say, mandatory for schools to fund, and then so like it becomes a matter of government funding in terms of like schools about who can participate in them. And this would matter less if it was just like a private endeavor where it's just like, I don't know, some women who actually care about doing it, some cis women who actually care about this funding it and being like, no, we're going to have the cis women's league. And I think that would be fine, you know, if it was just like, you know, a private endeavor. But once you get government funding in it, then it
but we need the without actually, the government funding, then so many girls are not going to get to play sports.
I don't know. I think
a
lot of people do care about this.
Yeah, still. Some would do some, but like it just without the government funding, but before government funding, it certainly wasn't happening much at all. What's happened since governments have started funding these things, since whatever. I mean, I don't know. Maybe if you can find me a country where the government's not involved in it and there are chicks who are doing great stuff, all right. But I think you're just wrong about this. I think that, I think you just don't care about sports. And so you don't understand how.
This is entirely possible.
I think that you don't, like the, my girlfriend would like want to strangle you right now for suggesting that we shouldn't have. I'm feeling that.
Hot.
I should try it actually. I'll go suggest it after this. See what she does to me. Because without that, before Title IX, even my mom, like her generation, like they didn't get these opportunities, and suddenly it was like, oh, I could play tennis. Like, and all these women were freed up to like get to play sports, and everything that you learn from about teamwork, about yourself, about your own strength, like it just, without that funding, no one gave a shit, because we always knew that men were going to be better at sports than women. And so no one cared. Like, let's just focus on who the people who are going to be the best and not, and like relegate women to like, you play with your dolls and you're good at nurturing and teaching and stuff. So you,
I'm certainly not saying that we need to go back to that.
Yeah, but that's how that's what happens. Right. Yeah, but that's what happens when you don't purposely fund. I mean, maybe we're off the ground at this point, and maybe everyone is like invested enough in female sports that like private funding would just take over. Maybe the government gave us all a boost.
I think I'm not even sure how the funding structure works. I think it's just the government mandates that schools do it, and then the schools themselves have to get some money for it, rather than like the federal government giving the money for it. So they probably already collect the necessary money to just keep these programs going.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue does become, I think, is when you allow like government funded things to discriminate. That's the main reason I care about this at all. Like, otherwise I wouldn't care, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter to me if trans women can, like the object level thing does not matter to me. It's entirely whether or not we allow discrimination like that in any way, because I feel that if we do, it expands. Mm. But otherwise I would not care. in either direction.
Yeah, well, to me, it's like, okay, sports was never supposed to be divided by gender identity. No one even thought about gender identity. It was male and female, but we used to say men and women when we meant male and female. So everyone knows that we mean to discriminate between these are the male sports and these female sports, because female bodies, it's not just a matter of height or anything like these one variable things that you could isolate. There are a million ways in which, hold on real quick, let me just make my point again. So there are a million ways in which male and female bodies are different. Almost all of which favor male bodies in terms of almost all the sports that we have invented, mostly by men, for men. Although it'd be hard to design sports that women were really better at. It would have to involve multitasking and pain tolerance or something. emotional labor, I don't know. So if we say, but at the same time, now we have people who are on, so it was just like people were being like, oh, you have to let trans women play against females in sports because they're really women. And it's like, yeah, but we were talking about biological sex, not gender identity. But now we have people physically transitioning in ways that make it so that there is no solution. We can't, it's not really fair even for trans men to play against cis men in sports because they don't have the lungs. They don't have the hip situation.
It's also not fair for trans men to play against cis women.
And it's not, exactly. And now it's not fair for trans men to play against cis women. And it's not fair for trans women to play against cis women when they have all these advantages. It's not. So that's why I'm like, everybody, every time you try to say, what about a third league? Trans people always get mad at me, and they're always get mad at me. And I'm like, I don't understand what is the workable solution.
In most schools or whatever, there's not going to be enough people.
Well, and then you can do things where you have an exhibition situation where someone is swimming for their own time, but, you know, and we just have it be on the records as a third category. Like in terms of contact sports, we got to figure something out, but we need to have solutions where either things can be like very individual where everyone just, you know, realizes like, okay, in this sport at this level, it's not dangerous and it's okay. All of these women are so bad at, you know, if you're in a small town where everyone's so bad at it anyway, and no one's done any records and whatever, then maybe everyone could just get along. But once things get at a really competitive level, once you're talking about scholarships and once you're talking about world records, like that's what really rankles me. Cause I'm like, I'm sorry, but we as females just very recently started getting any ability to play these sports at all, any ability to develop our strength at all and all of our skills at this kind of stuff. And so we are trying to see what females are capable of. And when you set world records, that's like showing like what we are capable of, just despite being able to potentially grow bodies inside of us. That's the burden that we bear for being females. We have these different bodies, but we are trying to see like what we can really achieve. And so if a trans woman puts a record on the books, a world record, it's like, yeah, but that's not, we didn't do that. I'm sorry to say we, because again, it's not even for me, like the gender identity stuff. I don't even identify as a woman necessarily, but I just, as a female, yeah. I'm like, when we're talking about records, like, oh, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Like I said, the main reason that I favor the solution that I said is just because the main thing that I'm concerned about is the wider implications of allowing sex-based discrimination like that, as it hits trans women or trans men or anything, because once you allow that, it does make it easier to discriminate in other situations. And like, I get that there is a uniquely valid reason to allow it in this one, but that doesn't make me any less nervous about the way that it would inevitably get extended.
How do you think it would get extended?
Well, I mean, like immediately, if you allow these schools to discriminate against trans athletes in this way, they were going to start doing things with bathroom bills immediately, like because they're going to say that it's a female sex space, you know,
right.
like instantly. There's people who are already making these arguments that like.
See, I just feel like those are separate arguments that should be had separately. You know,
I do too, and yet
there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us who feel like nobody gives a fucking shit about the bathrooms. But when it comes to sports, you know, those of us who care about competition are very like, hey, like this shit matters. And so there's a lot of people in the middle on this where they really are like, dude, restrooms aren't a danger. You know, if you're already not allowed to rape people in the restroom, it's not there like are, blah, blah, blah.
There
you
are
know?
People in the middle, yes. I am just concerned about the people who are in power who are very clearly on one side here.
But that's part of why we need to, I think, strengthen the center or however you want to think about all of this, because what we have in this culture war shit and these dumb politicians is just, you know, on either side. And so everybody, when they're voting, is voting off of like either, you know, just the culture war stuff is a little bit better to them on this side, or it's a little bit better to them on this side, whatever. I just, if we had a more reasonable debate going on, and thank you. I mean, we're doing it right now. So I think this is the reasonable debate, but if there's more of this, then we won't let the politicians get away with these leaning too far to the one side policies. And we can have nuance. We can say, look, sports are really complicated and some things are going to depend on the sport. Some things are going to be, if we have the ability to have a third league, if we have the ability to do exhibition stuff, depending, we're going to have to not have one size fits all solutions. And then with the bathrooms, it's like, I don't know, can we figure out a way, the people who are saying like, they never want any trans people in the bathroom, can we sit down with them one and just be like, first of all, do you really want this trans dude walking into the women's restroom? This guy with a beard, do you know, do you really want this trans woman, in a dress and makeup to be walking into the men's room and whatever? Like, is that what you want? And secondly, like, you know, just say to them, like, what would you need to see or to be comfortable? Do you need 10 years in California where no one gets raped in a restroom? Because we got that already anyway, I think, you know, but like
something like that. Yeah.
There are ways that we could do this without it just being like, you're literally never allowed to discriminate. Like the word discriminate is like you treat people differently. Yeah. We can treat you differently because you went through male puberty and we're trying to have a fair competition or we're trying to have a safe competition or whatever. That's a kind of discrimination. I don't think it's fair to say like we're never allowed to discriminate between types of people because that will lead to other forms. I mean, I definitely want us to be careful about that, but I think we will continue to have all this out and try to make sure that our country steers in a direction where we don't have just hateful policies that people are getting away with, you know?
Yeah. That makes sense. I got us off on a very large tangent.
Yeah, we're supposed to like, talk about pedophilia. But thanks
for... Did you have anything you wanted to talk to me about with the point of this discussion?
Yeah, sure, okay. Let me think. I still got questions.
Sorry for that.
That's okay. I'll always go sports. I'll always do it. And I do. I'm curious because people do sometimes come to me with little, you know, new ideas, and I'm hearing what you're saying, you know. But I still think we have more work to do to figure that out.
I do as well.
Yeah. Okay. So, do you have friendships with some children? Like that you were, you know.
I mean, I don't really know any kids. Like, yeah. You know, I don't have any kids myself, and I don't work in a job that involves interacting with children more than like incidentally. You know, I'm not going to say what my work is, obviously, but like, you know.
You're not a Catholic priest or a Boy Scout leader.
No, I was in the Scouts, but I haven't been for years.
Yeah. And are you only attracted to female kids?
No, I'm bi.
Okay. Well, I don't know if that was part of when you're trying to, you know, get people to be attracted to men. You've always been just bi. Trying not to make horrible jokes, honestly.
No, it's fine. what was I saying? I don't know. No, for a while, back when I was really like in the grips of POCD, I didn't even like let myself like go within 20 feet of a kid in a grocery store or like even glance at them. But now it's like, I don't know. I don't have some aura that's going to harm a child by happening to pass by them in the store. Like, you know, I can go to a park and sit down and read a book or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you don't really have any kids around anyway. And for you, this is just an attraction thing where, like, for me, I don't know how often you're, I don't know how often you're attracted to people in general. Like, for me, it's like, it doesn't even come up every day.
I don't really, you know, like sometimes I'll see someone on the street and I'll be like, oh yeah, they're hot. And then it's just like a passing thought and I walk by. I think that's how a lot of people are, you know, like, I don't know, when you see someone hot on the street, do you say anything to them? Most people don't, I don't think.
Yeah. People catcalling children. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Oh God.
So for you, it's also, it's just like, this isn't as hard because for you, you're also attracted to adults. And so, yeah, this is just something where you wanted to be able to not feel in danger about your life, be able to confide in a few people, just like whatever. And it sounds like it's made you become very thoughtful and figure out ways that we can make things better, so that kids are being molested less. I mean, I think that's so great that you are like coming on here and being like in favor of children's ability to get out of being molested. Like that's been your big message. Just you're very anti pedophilia. You know?
Well, I wouldn't say
or that. Anti whatever the action.
I would describe myself as at least slightly pro pedophilia.
Anti-child molestation is the word.
Yeah, anti-child molestation. I try and be very particular with my words here because there is a difference between pedophiles and child molesters.
Right. But
yeah, I know what you meant. I don't know. When talking about this sort of thing, I think it's useful to really try and emphasize that I am against raping kids because people just sort of automatically assume that if you're into them, you must be in favor of that somehow.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't think most men who are into women are just like secretly looking forward to someday when they can get away with raping women.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly.
Certainly there are some like that, but not all of them.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was trying to fix something. Okay. So then for the people who are, particularly for people who are only attracted to minors, what do you think society could do differently to help these people to not molest children and to have better lives? Other than, of course, taking your workshop on your conversion therapy workshop so that they are also attracted to
minors. I mean, so the thing to keep in mind is the majority of child molesters have like impulse control problems. If you are into children, you're an alcoholic, you should stop that.
Yeah,
you
gotta
not
drink.
Because that's one of the major risk factors is having low impulse control when you're around children. Mm-hmm. You know, just like if you think you could do that sort of thing, you should make sure that you are, you know, not around kids, which is generally pretty easy in today's society, unless you like have a child of your own.
Yeah.
If you do have a child of your own and then this becomes more difficult, but especially if you have a child of your own and you are, you know, into kids, and I would highly recommend not being an alcoholic for more than just this reason. But, you know, like be careful with your interactions around them. Just, you know, think before you touch them. I don't know,
at all, like, you mean? Obviously, you mean at all, just for the listener.
At all.
Not just, because it's kind of like back to the raspberries thing. Not just, you know,
yes.
Don't just think before you don't touch them at all in terms of sexually, but like also.
I mean, if you are a child's guardian, there are legitimate reasons to touch a child.
Sure.
To give them a hug, to pick them up, to like get them away from somewhere that they might get hurt.
But there's this stuff people will.
That's
take,
very different from like hurting a child or tickling them non-consensually.
Tickling non-consensually, or even just like the stuff that people would do, and they do this to adults sometimes as well, but like where they just put a hand on your back somewhere and like that's supposed to be okay. But like, you know, if you're doing it in a creep way, like just don't do that.
The easiest rule that I can think of just to communicate this is if you wouldn't do it to like another adult that you were a friend with,
don't take liberties. Yeah.
Don't do it to a kid.
Yeah.
Like if your friend was telling you to stop touching them or tickling them or whatever, you should stop.
Mm-hmm.
If your child is doing the same thing, you should stop. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's all sorts of things that people do to kids that they like a significant portion of this country thinks that it's okay to hate children still, like ever, which is insane. I don't know, I know some
kids that I kind of think should get hit, but it's,
I would very vehemently disagree with that.
I don't know if I'm kidding or not, but I
don't think there's any legitimate reason to hit a child, especially if you're an adult.
I don't like the way that my parents hit me, certainly. But
I mean, in retrospect, it was kind of hot when my dad hit me, but he still shouldn't have done it.
It was not hot when my mom hit me, unfortunately.
It was not hot when my mother hit me.
Yeah. Moms aren't as good at making it hot. That sucks.
They really aren't.
Yeah. Too much rage, at least in my experience. But so, okay. So what do you think about the child sex dolls, child virtual reality stuff?
Well, okay. So I think if you're not hurting an actual person, it just doesn't matter. Like, okay. I'm okay with people looking up drawn Lolicon stuff or Shotokan stuff or like
cartoons,
having like
and things.
Because, like, that's just pixels. You're not hurting a real human being. Because, again, the problem is they're hurting real people, not, like, acting on the attraction at all. You know?
Well, like, yeah. Just, so I think people are disturbed by the child sex dolls, et cetera, on two levels, right?
Yeah.
One, the level of just pure, like, initial reaction disgust, where you go, like, I just don't even want that to be happening in the world, that some guy is putting his dick in a child sex doll mouth or whatever. But you know, and that's one where you go, dude, there's so much fucked up shit happening in the world. Like, it's the least of your problems. If someone's using a child sex doll, if, you know, you don't want to, no one wants to imagine it, or I mean, most of us don't, but you know, that's just, but I think the more valid one is that it's a really open question whether stuff like that, stuff like virtual reality and even the cartoons, much less, yeah, child sex dolls and virtual reality stuff. We're not sure whether, I don't think we're sure as like a scientific community, whether that actually helps it to get people to the place where they're like, okay, well, this is enough. If I can have sex with this doll, then that'll be satisfying for me. Whereas it might have the effect of making you want more, just the way people sometimes get into porn and then they get into crazier and crazier porn and then you need more and more, or you just like, if you have this obsession with children and then you allow yourself to start looking at drawings and then you get whatever, and then you get a child sex doll, it's possible that it kind of becomes that slippery slope where you then are like, oh, now I'm so close, I really want to fucking get, you know.
See, This goes back to the thing I was saying about impulse control. Like, like a lot of people, I would say that the majority of people, you know, who have sex dolls of adults are not like at a high risk of raping real humans.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, part of the reason that they have a sex doll is to get out their urges in a way that doesn't hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Or just because they can't get laid and they just want something.
Yes, that's
right.
And if they can't get laid and they don't care about not hurting people, they'll just go out and rape someone.
Well,
you know?
It's also hard to get away with rape. I mean, it's not as hard as it should be, but
indeed.
I like just
it,
the
it
phrase
should be a lot harder.
It should be a lot harder, but the phrase "just go out and rape someone," I'm like, well, I don't know if it's that easy.
No, but see, that's the thing with the impulse control, right? Like these aren't people who are generally thinking through their actions.
The consequences. Okay, yeah.
This is part of why so many child molesters aren't even into kids. It's because kids are especially easy to get away with raping a kid because kids can't get away
prey.
From it.
They're just better prey. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, like they can't leave. People are less likely to believe them. Like you can hurt them physically in front of other people, and like most humans won't care as long as it's not like making them bleed or something. Thing kids are just more convenient victims in a lot of ways for these sorts of people, and so I don't really think there's that much of a slippery slope from like enjoying Lolicon to like raping a real girl.
Yeah,
like I think a lot extra has to go wrong there. in order for people to actually start doing that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like both in terms of impulse control and like lack of empathy and like there's just, I don't know. But most of the pedophiles I know enjoy, you know, drawn porn, etc. But they're not like, none of them really seem to have much trouble avoiding raping kids.
Or even child porn. So they also avoid like looking at actual child porn.
God, like personally, I don't really like live action porn to begin with. Mm-hmm. So like, even if I was interested in that sort of thing, I wouldn't be looking it up. But also like, I don't want to contribute to hurting actual kids.
Yeah.
Like that. Right. Very different sort of thing. Also, it's real kids do not act like drawings do.
Yeah.
When you're having sex. You know?
Like, that's what I would imagine is like sex with kid has to be so much better in fantasy than in reality. It's the same way I think about sex with men too. I'm like, let's keep this to me. I just don't think these kids are going to be that good in bed. I don't think they're going to be, you know, I mean, it's like, yeah, I could see why in particular you wouldn't even, it's comforting. It's like the same feeling of disgust that I think most of us have toward children actually being hurt. You still feel you're not.
Yeah.
You're not, you no. also have that disgust feeling and that, like, that horror at children being hurt.
I wouldn't necessarily say it was disgust, but more just like, I would really, really prefer the children don't get harmed, especially not by me, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I
don't necessarily have to feel a disgust reaction about it to have it not want to happen.
It feels disgusting to me to hurt a child, you know? Like,
it took me years to get over the idea that I was just destined to hurt a kid. As a result of this attraction, you know, like, and that was very, very distressing, you know, that it was just, you know, thinking that it was inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
It's much nicer knowing that it's not, mm-hmm. that, you know, it is a personal choice. You don't have to hurt children.
Yeah. It's like what the Mormons told us about being gay. You know, you struggle with same-sex attraction, but you don't have to act on it. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to act on it.
After years of hearing this sort of rhetoric about gay people, it does feel sort of weird to use that exact same rhetoric.
But in this case...
But it's actually true in this case.
Right.
You know? It's like there aren't two consenting partners there.
Yeah. That's the difference. So
very, very different sort of thing.
Well, what do you think about children's ability to consent, though? Because that is, like I said,
I remember being a teenager, and I remember being into adults, and I think that, you know, I think the American-centric view that there is a clear-cut line at 18 is insane.
Well, I think we just figured we had to draw the line somewhere, because...
I think having a clear-cut line is probably okay. I think having it at 18 is probably not a great idea.
Well, different states are 16, 17, or 18. It also depends on if you're gay or straight or lesbian or whatever.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. People are always like, oh, look at this old gay guy who is like, look at this old influential gay philosopher or whatever who is in favor of lowering the age of consent. And it's like, well, yeah, because in the country that he was in, there was a age of consent that was like 24 for gay people and 17 for straight people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you not want to make that
the same
fair?
If anything, I think it should be different where gay people can have younger partners. I mean,
do you? Yeah,
I don't know whether I'm kidding or not, but it's just one of those things you hear from gay men all the time, especially how much they actually valued having a relationship as a 15, 16, 17-year-old with older men. I mean,
it's like thing I've heard from gay men as well.
Call me by your name. Yeah, call me by your name. Yeah. The guy was like 17 and 24 or something like that, whatever their ages were. I don't know. I think
it's hard to say. It's a person-to-person thing. Are not really that great of a solution to the problem. Like, rape is already illegal.
Yeah.
If it's only rape by statute, and I don't think that counts as rape.
Well, it's not the same as violent rape, but it's like, yeah, but then statutory stuff, because sometimes you see these chicks who are super young with some older dude and he's just buying her beers because she's 15 and that's who she can get beer from. And they're in a small town and, you know, then he just starts buying her and she wants to get out of her kids, out of her parents' house. But then they're still together 7 years later and he just bagged her when she was young. You know, like I've done some comedy in some small towns and, you know, done some crowd work that led to some stories, man, like, where you're just like looking at people in your audience going like, oh, like, you groomed her as a teen and y'all are still together and she's just got a sad small town life. And, you know, like, so some of that stuff is, I think we want something.
A lot of that could be solved again by allowing people to get away from their parents.
Well, I don't know.
Controlling.
Well, and I know, but I mean, it's
not necessarily to go to these sorts of men.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know that
to offer other options that don't involve that sort of thing.
Well, for one thing, if we just had a better functioning society in terms of people's economic prospects and different things, and that would solve a lot of these. Yeah.
Like I said earlier, if I went back to being 8 years old, back at my parents' house, and I wanted to get away from them hitting me, like, there's not really anything I could do. It's not like I could get a job and get out of there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not arguing in favor of child labor here, but like there's nothing I could have done to get out of that situation.
Yeah.
Like I did call the cops on them once, and a cop arrived 3 hours later and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's not a good solution here that doesn't involve letting kids leave from abusive situations.
But how would you, so if you had your utopian vision of what our laws would be regarding children and consent, what would that look like?
I think it would be that somewhere around 8 or 10, like I said much earlier, kids would be able to like meaningfully say no to their parents trying to indoctrinate them into whatever religion or like trying to force them into doing something that doesn't involve like, you know, getting nutrients or whatever, like mm-hmm. continuing to live. And at around this age also, we should allow them to start, or really, really at any age that a child is able to run away from their parents, they should be allowed to,
mm-hmm.
you know, like 3 or whatever.
Okay.
Like if a 3-year-old really wants to get away from their parents that badly, they probably have a reason for it, mm-hmm. you know? As for like sexual consent, mm-hmm. like the 8 and 10 number I was saying, it's just for saying no to people. Like,
yeah.
like for, obviously you can say no to sex at any age, but
yeah.
like for saying no to like parental coercion. But in terms of saying yes to sex, I mean, like there's places where it's like 13 to 14 and they don't seem to be doing hugely bad. I don't know. It really depends on a lot of things. Like the state that I grew up in had what are called Romeo and Juliet laws, where like the actual age of consent for fucking an adult was 18. But if you were between the ages of 14 and 18, you could have sex without it being illegal.
Yeah.
And I think that's at least a step in the right direction for having
most
a single
states,
line.
I thought most states had something like that. I mean, I guess not all do, but I thought most states
not
have some kind of, you know, margin of error, wiggle room or whatever. Yeah, if you're...
And a lot of times, people, it won't get prosecuted, you know, if it's like
yeah.
two teenagers
well,
having sex
sometimes,
with one another.
Yeah, because sometimes it's a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old are together, they're dating. And then if she turns 18 or he turns 18 before the other one, you know, then all of a sudden it's illegal, like that kind of thing. And
yeah.
so it's like, yeah, that's insane. We need something on the books because sometimes it is just like a parent of a child who is... hates the boyfriend and puts him in
yeah.
jail, and that's not always fair.
And that just
yeah.
destroys his life. I think also the sex offender registry is just evil.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess we should talk about the sex offender registry for a minute. Because
in New York, for example, if you get on the sex offender registry, you can't cross-dress. That's literally in there. You can't cross-dress.
But
you can't own stuffed animals. You can't.
Well, I understand the stuffed animals. You can't hand candy out of your car to children. I mean, okay, but
no, you can't own stuffed animals in your own apartment. Like,
why motherfucker wrote that?
Literally, yes. I was just reading an article about a guy who back in the '80s, as part of an organized crime thing, he kidnapped this child for ransom. Right, the kid
yeah.
didn't allege that he did anything sexual to him. The cops didn't allege that anything sexual happened. He didn't say that he did anything sexual. But because of legal technicalities, he had to go on the sex offender registry for kidnapping the kid. And he's still being punished for that, right? And that's insane.
Yeah.
You know, like 40 years later, you know, like I feel like there has to be like an end to this sort of thing at some point. You've got to like be able to move on with your life. Like, at
yeah.
least you've
well, I mean,
allowed
I don't...
to recover and rehabilitate.
Well, there's also just stuff where people are put on the sex offender registry for indecent exposure because they were peeing outside, and now they got to tell their neighbors about that shit.
Or because their partner's parent, when they were a teenager, decided that they were being evil in some way and decided to report them. Or because, you know, they sent a nude of themselves to another teenager when they were a teenager.
Yeah,
and
that kind of stuff.
Distributing child porn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is one of those things.
Like, the laws around these things are insane.
Yeah, we tried it out. It sounded like a good idea, I think. It's one of those many well-intentioned, you know, but paving the road to hell kind of things that we've tried, where it's like, oh, that sounds good. Let's make a list of these people and whatever. But I always thought it was like, you know, so many of these pedophiles who, the offending ones, they often work in pairs because it's like hard to get away with on your own. And so I'm like, isn't it possible that the sex offender registry is just helping pedophiles find partners?
Actually, in California, at least, it's illegal to look yourself up on the registry.
Well, you look other people up, though, right? Or you can, you know what I mean? Like, just your neighborhood? Isn't there just, like, a map or something?
There is. Not exactly. Okay. I mean, I'm not on the registry myself, obviously, but I previously knew one person who was, and it wasn't great, you know, like this was someone who was on the registry because for the, you know, like the thing of being a teenager, having a teenage partner and your partner's parents hate you thing. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like an actual child molest.
Yeah.
But like they were still, you know, screwed over by it for this was like a decade on. I don't know. There are better solutions to that sort of thing than just perpetually harming these people.
Yeah.
And like, there are also like, so the Supreme Court legalized consensual gay sex throughout the entire country in 2003, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And before that, you could get on the sex offender registry for that.
Yeah.
So there are still people on the sex offender registry for that in Montana, in Idaho, like.
Yeah, that's crazy too.
Who are on the sex offender registry for having consensual gay sex with another adult man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, it just feels...
There's a lot of criminal justice stuff that just needs to happen. I mean, I think most of us are agreed about, like, you know, decriminalizing nonviolent drug crimes, much less cleaning up the sex offender registry. If anybody's super pro sex offender registry, please come on the podcast and let me know why you think
we should hear any, like...
So I've never heard anyone be pro. Everyone who has an opinion about it at all is like, this is a disaster. Obviously, it needs to be at least greatly reformed, if not completely scrapped.
I would be interested to hear any argument in favor of it beyond just like we need to hurt these people.
Right? Yeah, exactly, that kind of stuff. But yeah, other than that, I don't know.
And because I don't buy that. I don't think we need to keep hurting these people, even the actual child molesters. I think there's better ways of preventing recidivism than that.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, mostly people need some real like therapist help, whatever, where someone helps them maybe learn to be attracted to older people. Someone help if it's possible. Someone helps them work on techniques, whatever, like you said, like making sure they're not drinking and dealing with their impulse control. There's stuff like that, right? That people could have. And so, but the mandatory reporting laws, how is that for therapist, if you say to a therapist that you're like attracted to kids, but you're never gonna molest one, you like whatever, and you're here for that, like they don't have to report that, right?
No, they don't legally have to.
Yeah,
right. But they're not legally mandated to report it if you say that you're a pedophile. However, many therapists will, because if they think you're a danger to yourself or others,
right? It's a judgment call. It's a judgment call if they think you're a danger to others like that. Yeah. And so
and
they
if they make the wrong judgment call, they could be held legally liable for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, as is, it's not like I was. This post has long since been deleted from Reddit, but I was reading something ages ago from a guy who was like, he was like, I'm a pedophile. I went to a therapist to talk about it because I needed to talk to someone and I wanted to, you know, not hurt kids.
Yeah.
And they said, I talked to the therapist and then they sent cops to my house.
Damn.
And they told my parents.
Damn.
And like, that's a fucking nightmare. Like that, I don't know. That
doesn't help anything.
That's how you destroy someone's life and make them have no other options. You know?
Have you ever talked to a therapist about it?
About this? Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah. So it does feel too dangerous.
It really does. I mean, I have other pedophile friends who I've talked to about this sort of thing. And, you know, that's
Did any of them go to therapy?
No, not about this.
Yeah. Wow. See, that's a disordered state of affairs.
It's just way too dangerous.
Yeah. If y'all are all too scared to go, that's crazy. I mean, we got to do something about that. I mean, but there are organizations who I know work on this who are.
There's, I think there's Before You Act. Mm-hmm. And, which is literally called that. There's also a VerPed, stands for Virtuous Pedophiles, which is in this field. I haven't really checked them out, but I heard they're okay.
Well, the name's pretty gay, but all right.
The name is pretty shitty, I will admit.
VerPed sounds like it was made up by an incel, but okay.
That's it. I did check out their forums once, and there's a section for female pedophiles, and I clicked on that. And nearly 100% of the threads there are just male pedophiles, like, clearly looking for dates.
If I can't date a kid, I at least want to date a female pedophile. That's funny.
That's better. But it's not, you know.
Yeah. Well, also, if it's VIRPED, it just, like, looks like VERPED.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. There are organizations in this field that I think are doing good work.
Okay.
At least in theory, in this general direction. There aren't really... There aren't really many open pro-C, pro-contact organizations out there because, you know, that's not really a defensible position.
Yeah.
It's also, pro-contact. I think NAMBLA was sort of like that back when
they
still around.
Exist?
But then they got...
Are they gone? Is NAMBLA gone?
I think they are gone, yes. If they do still exist, they're a significantly different organization than they used to be.
They're just like a black
one. One of their members got implicated in some crime like 2 decades ago, and that basically destroyed their entire organization. I think it was killing a child, actually, now that I think of it.
Oh, shit.
I haven't looked into this in ages.
Friends with the Clintons and everybody, or what?
No. If they were friends with the Clintons, they would have gotten away with it.
That's a good point. Well, that could have been the scapegoat.
All right,
damn.
Yeah, this shit is just insane. I don't know. Like, I don't know what to believe about that. I don't know if I really believe that all those people are actually sexually attracted to children. I feel like it must be just some, like...
Oh, I think it's teenagers for most of them.
Yeah, I think it's mostly a mutually assured blackmail thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is what I imagine, right? You're on an airplane, you're on a private jet with some cool people, rich people. You're all breaking all the rules anyway, right? And... some chicks come out who look pretty young, and your friend Epstein is like, "Hey, you want some chicks?" By the way, they're sitting on his lap.
I mean, Epstein was definitely into younger children,
right? But I'm just saying, so like Epstein's there, right? And a couple of chicks walk out, and then they're sitting on his lap and stuff. And then Clinton, he's like, you know, turns to Bill, and it's like, "Hey, why you want one?" And maybe Bill, how old are they? And
if the president of the United States is telling you it's okay, you generally feel a lot safer doing that.
Yeah, or just
presumably you're being protected in the same way that he is.
Oh, we're over international waters. 16 is legal in Thailand. I mean, I don't even know, but I'm just saying, like, I could see how a lot of people are gotten that way. Right, a lot of people are that way.
There's a reason a lot of white people move there.
Right, and exactly. So international stuff, and other people are doing it. The mutually assured destruction. I mean, I think for a lot of people who are rich and powerful enough, they go so steeply up the hedonic treadmill that, you know, in terms of what they can buy themselves, all these pleasures, and what you can get away with becomes very thrilling. And so breaking the taboo at first, a lot of these people aren't actual pedophiles, right? They're just normal men who are attracted to pubescent females and older. And so, but there's a special kind of like attraction to... There's a thrill to breaking the taboo. And there's kind of a like hotness to those young thighs and everything. Like there's something that we could all kind of understand about why it would be a thrill for men to get to have sex with quite young women. And so everyone else is doing it. And then... the thrill of breaking that itself becomes something. Once you're so rich that you've already experienced all of the world's pleasures, like what are you going to do besides stuff like this? And so I think that then I wonder if it doesn't become a bragging rights, keeping up with the Joneses thing almost between some of the richest, most powerful people, where they're like, how young can you get away with fucking kids? You know, I mean, all kinds of, I mean, I, and it's like, it's a, mutually assured destruction, not just in terms of operative blackmail stuff, but I could see it just being in terms of sweetening, in terms of securing business deals. So, you know, these guys already play golf together, right? And then make all kinds of misogynistic, fucked up jokes or whatever it is. And then, so a handshake on a golf course, you know, really, you know, now we know, hey, like, we're in this together, buddy. How much more so if you guys have fucked kids on an island together, do you know that you will never go back on whatever business deal? Or, you know, I could see that being a real part of it. And yeah, kind of, I was like trying to do a joke for a minute, maybe I should do this, but about how I kind of wish that gay stuff still was taboo, if not illegal, because it used to be that when these people wanted to do their eyes wide shut business deal parties, and get everybody in that mutually assured destruction thing, they just had to do gay stuff together. And that was enough to like ruin your career if that ever came out.
That's a theory that I've heard that the Republican Party holds itself together through butt stuff. Yeah.
Mutually assured destruction of butt stuff.
Democrats can't do that anymore.
Democrats can't do it anymore. And so instead,
But I do think it's both of them.
Yeah, it probably is. But I'm just saying, like, if the gay thing isn't taboo enough, then instead these people had to turn to fucking kids. And that's the only thing that is mutually assured destruction. So I'm like, bring back the gay taboo so that they stop fucking the kids for their business deals. But
I mean, anyway. Part of why I wanted to do this sort of thing, this interview, I mean, is because, you know, well, I've heard a lot of space from older millennials that I know about, like, how it was in the 90s and the early 2000s about gay stuff. And it's like, you know, I'm glad I didn't live through that. But I do kind of, could push against negative social stuff that exists now that hasn't been totally eaten by assimilationists already.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is one of them to actually potentially make a positive difference with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so is there anything else that you want to explore with this? I feel like we've covered a lot of topics, but I don't know if there's anything you still think you want to convince me or people of, or a case you want to make, or strategies for the culture.
No, I think I covered most of everything that I had to say.
Just basically sounds like, I mean, on the one hand, we've got some ideas about empowering children to be able to say no and like respecting their ability to say no and setting up situations for people who need to really escape their childhood home. And then on the other hand, it's just like, hey, could we maybe, if we could all like chill a little bit about just like this need to just hate pedophiles, hate people for just being attracted to kids, if we could all kind of expand our empathy to realize a lot of these people don't fuck kids. A lot of these people are also attracted to adults. A lot of these people, how horrible would it be if you were only attracted to kids? And a lot of those people still don't fuck kids. A lot of the people who are fucking kids are these like sociopathic and or alcoholic low impulse control dudes who just, you know, are going to fuck something and children are easier targets. And so we really just need to restructure our empathy and our conversation around the pedophilia conversation so that like we need to be able to call a spade about who's actually hurting kids and who's not. And then stopping so obsessed with just like hating pedophilia or pedophiles. And I don't, you know, like, I don't know what that would look like exactly, but just if we could, I guess I want to get to a world where you can tell your fucking therapist.
At the very least,
This is a struggle you have.
It doesn't necessarily be something that I have to be like, I don't know if we need to go to like pride parade length, but like.
No, maps. What is it? Non-offending minor attracted persons or whatever. Pride.
There's no euphemism that I've ever heard for pedophile that ever like came across to me as like worthwhile.
Good one. It's kind of like vaginas. There's not a good word for it.
Yeah, there's no, I was thinking about this. It would be really funny if after SRS, I just kept calling my near vagina a dick.
I like it. I mean, I think it's funny.
Be really funny.
I already call my vagina my inside out dick, you know.
Yeah.
You call it whatever you want.
And after rest, it will be an inside out dick. Yeah. So, you know. Anyways, you summarized the points that I've made quite well. I didn't really feel like I was arguing with you at any point during this, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying about it. It's not like I'm going to be in any of these things. Like, I'm already so sympathetic to most people's perspectives about most things that even I have questions and I have concerns and I'll try to voice those. But this is one I've already been thinking about for a long time just because of...
I've been thinking about this a long time, too.
Interesting moral conundrums and stuff. I don't know. And especially as a comedian, like, pedophilia is one of those hilarious topics. And so, like, anything that's really fucked up is also really hilarious. So, I mean, you think about it and it's just like... But again, and because I had a friend in college, like I just happened to be, it was at a gay organization where I went to college and, you know, he was not offending and he talked about it. And I was just like, whoa, okay. Like, let me talk to you about all of this. And, you know, he was planning on going to live in a country where things were legal. One day, I don't know. I have not kept up with him because there's some places.
I know several Brazilian pedophiles, and down there the age of consent is, I think, 14, at least in some of the states, the state equivalents that they have. So they've talked about how much they pity us Americans.
Yeah. Well, my friend really believed that, like, you know, that these, I guess this is one more topic that I did want to kind of explore. He really believed that, you know, man-boy relationships and maybe just, you know, adult-child relationships, depending on the age and the situation of the kid and whatever, could be healthy, good things. And that part of what happens is that if your culture tells you that anytime you've ever had any kind of sexual contact with an adult, then you are totally, you are hurt and victimized and that you should feel disgusted and gross and that you're going to need a lot of therapy. Like, if we kind of tell kids that it's going to be that horrible, if that happens, then that might not be actually the best way to help a kid.
This is something I've heard from several people who've had sex when they were minors, you know, is that they were totally fine until other people found out and started acting like they shouldn't be fine.
Right. So that's an open question for me. That's where I don't know.
I don't know. I certainly don't think that that's universal. Certainly, sex with minors definitely does hurt a significant portion of them.
I think that's what it is. It's like, it can go really wrong. I mean, already sex between adults can go really wrong, especially when it's a male aggressor to a female. Then there's so much that happens where the woman didn't even really consent or didn't want to consent or this or that. And so we already have so much of that going on that I think it just becomes like, well, when you have sometimes some adults could have healthy relationships with some children, if children, whether that is 13 or 17 or whatever, but somewhere that's different than our laws currently state, where that could be a healthy, good thing that's actually beautiful and mentorship wise and blah, blah, blah. But the amount of times that that'll go wrong, even if society weren't, you know, had a different attitude about it, maybe the amount of times it'll go wrong, it's just easier for us to have this hard and fast rule, or maybe there are psychological issues that we're just not seeing or thinking about where it actually really is bad. But I'm just not sure. And I don't know how you get the grant for the longitudinal study on that shit.
I've definitely heard it, cause it's hard to talk about this too, because like the people I know who've had positive relationships, like sexual relationships with adults when they were minors, do not want to talk about it because they don't want to hurt those adults.
Yeah. But I mean, I've had comedian friends who talk about it on stage. And of course, like there's the typical, you know, it's a cliche at this point. They're like, well, I wish my teacher would have fucked me, you know? But the guys who did have a sexual relationship with their adult, females and males, it's usually dudes that this happened with who they come and have positive experience. And they say like, look, it was awesome. It was hot. She taught me about sex. She introduced me to good music and like, and it's like, I don't know what those guys, like, I haven't talked to them enough and I don't know whether they're really just masking over deep psychological issues or they don't realize that they have a certain kind of attachment issues or difficulties in their love life now because of that. I don't know. I could see the possibility that some 15 and 25 year olds could have a good relationship that was useful and beautiful and whatever. And that, and that it's only then if society tells you that this horrible thing happened to you, that it might, I could see that. I could see that possibility for sure.
Yeah. See, personally, I agree with everything you just said, but I don't go after teens myself because, you know, I don't trust myself, mm-hmm. you know, to make those sorts of decisions because obviously I'm going to be biased, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Like in the incredibly unlikely chance that I end up around a lot of kids and one of them likes me, maybe I'll reconsider that. But I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? And so like this is the thing I recommend to other pedophiles as well, is like, you know, like, yes, some kids are definitely capable of having real relationships with adults. But also you're pretty biased on that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to want that to be true about whatever kid that you're having feelings for. You know, and so you're not necessarily going to be correct about your determination on that for any given child, and so maybe you shouldn't go after it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's my big issue is like so many adults are so bad at understanding consent and enthusiastic consent and whatever, and the gray areas and people's nonverbal body language that they think is communicating a lot. So if a 23-year-old woman thinks that she's indicating all this stuff with nonverbal body language loud and clear, and a 30-year-old guy just doesn't get any of it and thinks that she's down, then how much more so are there going to be miscommunications when there's a 13-year-old or a 16-year-old involved and he or she, you know, but especially that's what nonverbal communication is, one of those things where like, and I've heard of some studies where like women are better at reading nonverbal communication than men, and it makes some sense. Like, because I know I'll do that kind of thing. Like, someone's massaging me, and I'm trying to communicate, like, okay, don't do that by wiggling or moving or this or kind of thing. And he just doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it. Whereas typically a woman is going to like be more responsive. And so it's like, I think when women also use nonverbal language, we think we're communicating a lot of the stuff, and we don't realize like, some people are not going to get that at all. So yeah, I just think for a 14-year-old,
yeah,
she's so ill-equipped.
I think it's just a very gray area that has a lot of potential to seriously hurt people.
Yeah,
and so like, if you really do care about them, you can just be their friend. Yeah. You know, you don't have to fuck them.
Yeah, I think that sounds really nice. I think there should be more mentorships and friendships and stuff, but I think we probably just shouldn't have sex with people who are more than 3 years younger than you. And if you're above the age of 20, I don't know, you know, whatever the math is on all of any of that.
Yeah. I'm involved in a 5-year age gap right now, but, personally, I quite like age gaps in my relationships. So usually I've been the younger one.
Yeah, whatever the age is, around that age of 18, you know, whatever the rules should be. Because obviously, once you're both past the age of 22, then go for whatever age gap you want. But yeah,
and I mean, I'm older than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really think I had much else to say.
I think we covered it. Did we solve it? I think we solved it.
Yeah. We solved the issue of pedophilia for now and forever. It's over.
I thought you were pro pedophilia. You just want child molestation.
Yes, we solved child molestation. It's done. Just implement my policies and it'll be gone next year.
Mm-hmm. I do think
if we just implemented, like, if we legalized running away and like created places for kids to run away to, that would solve a huge amount of child molestation pretty much immediately.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I think that's something that everyone could get behind anyway, however you feel about any of the rest of the stuff. Like,
I think a lot of people do like having, frankly, abusive levels of power over their children, would oppose that.
But I mean, like, most children aren't going to run away. Even if you're like, I don't like my parents, they don't make me macaroni like I want to, or like they're shitty and kind of angry and rageful and sometimes violent and they're whatever. But even still, most kids are not, it's not going to dissolve the family, because most kids are still going to realize, like, yeah, I'd rather get Christmas presents than go into the foster care system or whatever this is over here, you know, to become a homeless shelter kid. I mean, we should have children shelters, but they're not going to be so desirable that like kids are going to be running away because their parents are, you know, authoritative, much less authoritarian, you know.
But yeah.
So let kids run away, help them with that. And then we need to have some therapist network of people who are trained in this, I think, so that we don't have to, maybe we don't need to burden every therapist with making these judgment calls. Sounds like that's a legal issue as well as just a cultural one.
Yeah. I think mandated reporting is evil, and I think we should just get rid of it.
I mean, mandated reporting makes some sense if someone's is being hurt. You know, if someone
says to you, "I am going to go and rape my child," right. Later, right. That's very different from like,
yeah, exactly. I think there could be a clear cut wording in the mandatory reporting stuff. And again, just like a network of people who are trained around the country and around the world, but people who are trained in handling pedophilia clients. And so that way, you know, you can know that this is a safe network. Someone that will know how to help you and won't fuck your life over. I mean, that seems obvious.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is also, we need people who are interested in getting that training and who are willing to work with those populations. And that's where a lot of us come in, who are kind of weirdo pervert people who, you know, who just live in these worlds where like, we're just not as uncomfortable by it. Like, I would be a great therapist for pedophiles, you know, I think.
This is essentially what I do.
Yeah.
In my spare time is I meet with people who have, not necessarily in person, but like online. I meet with people who have realized that they're into kids, and I help them. You know, this is a lot of what I do in my spare time, is essentially act as a therapist.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know, I get a lot of joy out of that. It's nice to be able to help other people like me, you know?
Yeah. That'd be great if you became like a famous YouTube star where, you know, like people help each other with their transitions and stuff. Like that would be, maybe that's going to happen
as well.
Maybe in 2 years, you're going to be, you know.
Yeah. I'm expecting a multi-decade timeline for this one.
All right. It could be a couple decades. Yeah. Word. Well, we've been at it for Joe Rogan amount of time. So
this is a lot.
But that was fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Had a good time.
Yeah, thanks for being willing to talk about this stuff. It's a dream come true of mine. No, I've been asking people on GenderFluids for years. I've been asking people to talk to me about this stuff.
That's why I suggested it, I think, to our mutual friend.
Sweet. Yeah, if you've got any other friends with some wild stories.
I don't have any white supremacist friends, so I can't help you there.
They're hard to find. They're hard to find.
Are, you know, I mean, they generally don't like interacting with trans women.
I love the idea of a white supremacist trans woman, though. That's gotta be. There's gotta be some white
supremacist. They exist, and dude, they're really, really, really stupid. I have yet to meet a smart, intelligent
white supremacist trans woman, or just any white supremacist. I mean, I don't know.
No, I mean, in particular, white supremacist trans women. Like, in order to be. It's like we were one of the groups that the Nazis targeted, you know, like in order to join in on that, you kind of have to.
Some people think
especially
that,
dumb.
Some people think that Hitler just didn't get his groupings just right, you know, so they're like, yeah. He was wrong about some of the social issues, but I'm sure. Well, whether you're a white supremacist trans woman or just a white supremacist, or if you have any other kind of political opinion, and it doesn't have to be stuff that like I'm gonna, you know, disagree with. I just don't, you know, whatever it is, I will find ways to empathize and sympathize, and also ways to question it. So bring it on, whatever. But you do want to, you probably, I mean, usually I would ask guests if they have anywhere that they want to send people, you know, for their work, but do you have anywhere that you would like to send people in terms of, you know, just resources?
Do not try to find me. I don't exist. I solely existed for the purpose of this interview. And afterwards, I will cease to exist. Mm-hmm. I am not online. Do not find me.
It's actually just a funny voice I've been doing this whole time. So this is just imaginary friend.
I was thinking about using a voice changer actually for this, but then I was like, you know, I haven't spoken in a masculine voice in a while. I can just do that.
Is this your masculine voice?
Yeah, I guess. It's. I haven't spoken in a long time. It's more masculine than I usually speak.
Oh, I see. Well, maybe when we stop recording, I can hear your regular voice. But yeah, so could you say one more time though, there was like one organization I think that you were mentioning as a good resource.
What is it? I think it's called. Yeah. There's Before You Act. There's Verped. There's there's multiple organizations that talk about this sort of thing and research it. I think Before You Act is mostly a research organization, actually.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah. But there's definitely people you can reach out to talk to online. I would recommend not talking to a therapist about this personally. But I mean, that's your decision. If you want to make that risk, you.
Are there good online forums where people can go? Because, you know, you want people finding people like you and not finding people who are going to treat them child porn, right? So, like, is there somewhere good you can steer
people? It's pretty hard to find people who are willing to trade you child porn. I'm just going to say this. Most of the people who have CP are not just going to tell you that they do. Yeah. You know? there's some really complicated OPSEC involved in that.
Mm-hmm. But where should people go? Is there somewhere that you could direct people if they do need an online community of people to talk to about their struggles? Or are those all kind of like private?
That's the difficulty. That's the difficulty. Like, there's not really any public stuff like this. Like, Twitter literally has in its rules that if you post about saying that pedophilia, that being into children is okay, that's against the rules. They'll ban you for that.
Yeah.
Even if you're like against people acting on it.
Right. Of course.
Which is, I don't know. That seems very counterproductive to me. But
yeah, not all of Twitter's rules make sense.
Most of the rules don't make sense, I would say. There's not really much in the way of forums online for this. Like, you know, the big websites don't like hosting us.
Yeah.
And, you know, little websites generally get doxxed.
So basically, you got to move to one of the really, really liberal cities and start poking around until you find someone in person. Is that...
I would recommend going on Twitter and seeing who speaks English who follows Japanese lolicon artists and just looking around. That's all I would say to find people like me online.
There you go.
But like, I guess you could go on Barag on Mastodon. That's BARAAG, but that's mostly an art posting site. I don't know. There's not really much in the way of places you can find this sort of stuff.
That's interesting. But okay, so you might be able to find a non-offending pedophile friend if you find people who follow anime stuff. What is it?
Yes. Yeah. That's all I could say, really. Like,
all right.
You definitely would find me that way.
Gotcha. Word. All right. Well, this has been so much fun and very enlightening. So thanks again.
I'm glad to have this conversation with you. Thank you for thank you for talking with me.
Thanks. All right. I'm going to end the...
Oof. All right. You made it. You did it. You spent a few hours with a pedophile now. A non-offending pedophile, obviously. Anyway, what am I supposed to do but laugh? But we did, I think, have a very productive conversation and put a lot of ideas out there. And definitely, if someone wants to come on, I mean, I would imagine if you're going to have thoughts about any topic, you might have some thoughts about this one. I mean, someone out there might who goes, hey, like, either you're wrong about X, Y, and Z, and I want to come on the podcast and talk about that, and or you know, you didn't think through A, B, and C. It doesn't have to be in opposition. If you want to come in and argue your case in a future episode of Politically Nonbinary, it doesn't have to be like counterpoint to what you just said. It could be a mixture. It could be, you could say, hey, you're right about everything, but also this. You could say, hey, you're wrong about everything. Or you could say, hey, these are the things I thought you were wrong about. These are the things I thought you were right about. Or these are the things that we could add. That's how these conversations are going to go. You either come onto the podcast with your new idea of what you want to argue for society, or you come on the podcast and say, hey, like, let me respond to that topic. You could also come on and have your own topic that you want to talk about, but we could do a little segment in the beginning that's like, hey, let's address the last episode. Like, here are my thoughts, kind of like a letter to the editor section in the beginning of a magazine where it's like, let's first address, hey, what did you think about the last episode that you heard? And what are your thoughts on that? And then we can get into your topic. That's all fine too. The whole point is that I just want to keep evolving the conversation on all these topics forward. Okay, so to support the podcast, obviously my favorite thing for you to do is tell your friends about the podcast. If you know someone who you think would like this, appreciate what we're doing, maybe want to be on it, then please send them the podcast, tell them about it. So telling friends in person or online, sharing the podcast in any way on social media would be cool. I have an Instagram for the podcast, Politically NB on Instagram. And so you can follow that. I post on there sometimes, but it just is what it is because I got so many projects and things to do. I can only spend so much time on fucking social media. You can also follow me on Instagram at Ellen DeGenderless if you want to reach out to me or if you want to find out about my shows, etc. You could rate and review the podcast. Reviews are best, but even a nice 5-star rating would be great. They do them on Spotify as well as Apple Podcasts now. Well, at least the ratings. I don't think there's reviews on Spotify, but okay. Rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend. Yeah, subscribe. That would be great. Subscriptions are much better for us than just random downloads. And you want to keep up with all the juicy content that I'm going to be putting out. And yeah, you can, oh, there's patreon.com/politicallynb. That's the best way. patreon.com/politicallynb or wrongqo.substack.com because I continue to not get around to fixing that or changing it to the new podcast title, but it is what it is. I just the other day put out a little voice memo of a fun stand-up clip. So I keep doing that. Sometimes it'll be bonus content that's actually about the... I was going to include... All right, I'll go add it back in. Sometimes I'm going to put up a stand-up, there's going to be content from this podcast, from these recordings that didn't make it into the public podcast, and that'll go into the Patreon Substacks. Other times, it's going to be stand-up for me. Presumably, you're into me and my stand-up if you're listening to this, or you would be if you haven't seen it yet, heard it yet. Anyway, so that's on there. You can always Venmo me. It is Gay Ariel, GayArielle. And just, if you are sending me money for this, then just send me a little note that says, hey, you know, love your podcast or whatever. Yeah, that's probably about it. Join us next week when my friend Lainey is going to convince everyone that they should give up on their dreams. And yeah, come to some of my shows. As always, to the team who makes this podcast possible, Caleb Sexton on graphics and Coleman Wilson on music. If you'd like to become a part of the Politically Nonbinary team, you can reach out to me at ellendegenderless on Instagram or ellendegenderless@gmail.com. Do I sound all NPR?